What is up, brothers and sisters? Welcome to the Mitch Gray Show. Another great episode ready for you. Thank you so much for watching. Make sure you go subscribe. And this is actually the last interview of 2020. What a year it has been. And I couldn't think of anyone else better to finish this year off than with my friend, actually, that we just met this year and have had some great conversations, Mr. Christian Klepp. How are you today, brother?
Thank you, sir. It's a pleasure to be here and glad to be on the show.
Yeah, I'm excited for this conversation, man, and in the year this way. My goal in 2020 with the podcast was to do only interviews. I've never done a year where I, and we succeeded. We did it. Only interviews. So next year we've got some other cool stuff planned. And so yeah, fun stuff. So Christian, you are what I'm going to call a B2B expert, marketing expert. Some people don't like it when I use the term expert. Oh, well. B2B branding professional. So let's start there, man. Let's go twofold here, okay? I'm going to give you two big questions to start out. Number one, what is B2B marketing? That's some lingo that some people may not be familiar with. And number two, why is it important?
Okay. Well, first of all, thanks for having me. And let's just also thank Ryan Christopher from Quad Meets, because that's really how we met, right?
So. Yes. Oh, Ryan, the great connector, right? The great connector.
The great connector. So, let's start out with, okay, so B2B. Let's start out with what that is, right? So B2B, it means business to business, all right? So the difference between that and, like, say, B2C, which is business to consumer, is really that, you're providing products or services mainly to businesses or organizations, right? The sales cycles tend to be longer. The buying process is certainly a more complex one, mainly because there are a lot of, like, systems and requirements in place that, you know, like a vendor or a so-called service provider has to fulfill in order to meet the specific requirements that said organization has. And also because there are several players, I'm going to call them players, that are involved in that decision-making ecosystem. And a lot of these people tend to be managers, key decision makers, people in the C-suite. So C-suite being like CEO, COO, CMO, right? And such. So I wouldn't say that B2B is completely without emotion. There is some emotion involved, but it, certainly people in the B2B ecosystem do not make purchases based on emotion or impulse.
Right.
They rely on information, oftentimes data, oftentimes also referrals or recommendations from industry colleagues. And also, they're more often than not, they're probably going to, like, check your company out online and see if there are any so-called, like, industry reviews and such. Anything that will help to influence the informed decision that they need to make before they decide to use someone like you, right?
Right.
So that was the first question. The second question was about why
branding? Why is it important? Yeah.
Okay. So why don't we just start, why don't we take a step back, all right? Like, what is branding, okay? Because it's another one of these terms, you know, you hear people use it. I would even dare to say that people use that term very loosely, mm-hmm. right? Yes. Yes. So let's start with defining what a brand actually is, right? Let me start by defining what a brand is not.
Yeah.
All right? A brand, contrary to popular belief, is not a logo. It's not an ad. It's not a mission statement, a trademark, or a tagline. These are part of a brand. Mm-hmm. They are the end result. But that's not what a brand is. A brand, in its simplest form, is the collection of perceptions that your target market or the people will have that are linking back to you, your products and solutions, and ultimately also your business, right? So that's what branding is. So there's many ways to explain branding, right? But that's one of the simplest forms. And also in a nutshell, your business has to be able to solve two problems in order to generate revenue. And this kind of like sounds like it's a given, but I'm going to mention them anyway. So the first one is you have to get people to know you and know something about you. And number two is you have to get people to choose you over the competitor, right?
Yeah.
And branding is a key component that helps to determine why or when, why not customers choose you. So that's on the definition of branding. So why is branding important, and why is it important for a company or a business, regardless of their size, to have a brand and a relevant brand strategy? Well, maybe to simplify it, let me begin by maybe quoting two famous people and, you know, highlighting their thoughts on branding, right? So the first one, shall we say, like some of my favorite quotes that are linked to branding. Right. The first one is by Steve Forbes. So yes, the editor in chief of Forbes magazine. So Steve Forbes said, "Your brand is the single most important investment that you can make in your business." Mm. Right. That's the first one. The second one is one of my all-time favorites. It's by an Englishman called Sir John Hegarty. So he is the founder of one of the biggest and most disruptive advertising agencies in the world called BBH. And he said, "We haven't come this far to be ordinary." Mm. Right? Mm. So how is that linked to branding? What makes you stand out? Why should people choose you? Right? And why is a brand strategy important? And I've heard customers and I've heard prospects, you know, say this when I've spoken to them. They'll say, "Yeah, Christian, that all sounds well and good, but you know, we'll worry about that brand strategy stuff later when we make money."
Right.
And I'm like, "Okay, so how exactly is that going to work?" Right. So let me illustrate it this way, and this is probably one of the easiest ways to illustrate the importance of brand strategy. Let's use the analogy of building a house. Okay. Mm. So just imagine you've got your empty lot or property, you've got your construction material, you've got the construction crew, the contractors, and all these guys that know how to build your house, but they don't have an architectural blueprint. Mm. What could possibly go wrong, right? You have people that have the right materials in place, and you have the staff or the team. They probably know how to build a house. They're just not going to know what it looks like when it's done.
Right.
Right. Right. But chances are when they put their act together and start building it, this thing is going to look like a Frankenhouse, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Or something that's even more dangerous. And I've seen this happen before. People who are not qualified for a specific task then end up performing that task. Resources are channeled or allocated in the wrong direction.
Right.
Right. There is no, speaking of direction, there is no clear direction to speak of, right? So in the end, what happens is burnout and just not a very efficient use of time, resources, and staff, mm-hmm. right? So if we transplant that house building example to the world of business, businesses and organizations, if people just jump straight into the implementation aspect of it, or they just focus on sales alone without having that strategic blueprint in place, they may have some success. But if they have a brand strategy on top of all of that, their success will be far more substantial. And to have that brand strategy, to have that blueprint in place, they need an architect that will help them to draw out that blueprint. And that's what a brand strategist does.
Right. So it's almost this idea of, and you kind of alluded to it before, and I would guess that most, if you've been a part of building any business, whether you're an entrepreneur or you worked with a startup, or you worked even with a larger company and they were going through a process of rebuilding, oftentimes there's a very shallow definition and understanding of branding. And you alluded to that with what a branding isn't is logos and mission statements, et cetera. Those are elements.
Yeah.
Yes. So it's really like your definition of branding is expanding to this universal idea that ties in your purpose, your values, your culture, and the branding becomes the relational message. You use the phrase a collection of perceptions which is a really, really great. If you coined that yourself, you should totally trademark it. But
No, I didn't.
that's a great it's a great idea, to kind of encapsulate what branding really looks like. But you can easily see, and I've been in this, I'm probably in this right now a little bit, where especially for people that are smaller entrepreneurs that maybe have those mom and pop shops, which you also alluded to, people that are kind of what I call an individual agency. In other words, they're portraying agency feel, but they're really just one or two people that are driving the whole, business. What would your message be to those people who are struggling with this idea, either with a shallow understanding of branding, or limited resources to develop a brand, or limited idealism? How can that person even get started? Because I know we have a lot of those people listening to the show that are entrepreneurs, that are individual agencies. What I personally believe it's all human nature based, human behavior based. And so sometimes individuals can look at a big corporation and go, well, they have all the resources, or they have, they're able to hire a guy like Christian to come in and coach them on this. I don't have that kind of budget. Really, the principles don't change, do they? They can't, they stay the same no matter the level. It's just the level at which you can go changes.
Great question. To answer your question, I would say, it stays the same to a certain extent, but perhaps maybe to highlight what the differences are. I'd like to use a comparison. I don't want to sound like hostile or aggressive, but I'd like to use the comparison of like in terms of warfare, right? And it's a term, and I guess. And I guess many people have used similar comparison in the past, but it's like you're comparing, let's say, a modern and well-equipped and professional fighting force versus
Samurais.
a group of soldiers. Yeah, a group of soldiers that are resorting to guerrilla warfare.
Right.
And why are they resorting to guerrilla warfare? Because they know very well that if they try to take on a professional army in the same way that that army fights, the battle would have been lost even before it started, right? So they so what do you need to do, right? And there's plenty of examples throughout history, right, of situations where, generally speaking, also oppressed people have used guerrilla warfare against a more modern army. What are the lessons to be learned? They had to learn how to be smarter. They had to learn to be resourceful. They had to be careful not to exhaust their resources because they are limited, right? And then you always read about it, like, okay, they had to save their ammunition, they had to save on their rations, and so on and so forth. And they had to think ahead. They had to think ahead of the bigger army or anticipate what the bigger army is going to do, right? And strike, right? So if you take that militaristic comparison right now, and again, transplant it to the small business versus the larger organization scenario. Solopreneurs, small medium businesses, small partnerships, they have to be very careful how they spend the limited resources that they have. They need to be resourceful. They need to plan ahead. They need to anticipate what is going to happen as a direct consequence of their action, or in fact, a direct consequence of their inaction, right? But so to answer the question about like, okay, so how does a smaller company or a solopreneur or somebody that's running their own business, how do they build a brand if they don't have the resources of a multinational corporation? They have to be smart. They have to be smart. They have to basically they need to come up with three things, right? There's three essential components. Okay. So, component number one is they have to know what their vision is. So, what would they like to aspire to, and what would they like people to think of them in the long term? So, when I think, also just thinking in the, again, putting themselves in the shoes of the target audience, when said target audience thinks about my business, what should come to mind? Right? How will I position myself in the market? Right? How will I stand out? Right? The second one, which I know a lot of people tend to overuse, but I do think it's important. And when done the right way, it is effective. Tell your story.
Yeah.
But tell your story, keep it simple, right? Don't
Right.
overcomplicate point number three, going back to the guerrilla warfare example, know what your strengths are. Know what the strengths of your team is, and how can that be best used, right? Or be put to use in a constructive way, right? And how will that strength in those core competencies add value to the target audience? Because look, at the end of the day, what does the customer want? They want to know if you can solve their problem, right?
Right.
And so that's the way that that's the type of advice that I would give to smaller companies. I think and another thing I would also advise them to do is to leverage the power of networking, right? Be active on social media, so platforms like LinkedIn. And when I say be active on social media, I'm not saying you spam the living crap out of people, right? That's not what I mean. I mean you develop content, and that content can be in the form of written posts, that can be in the form of videos, but develop content that you know will add value to your target audience, the people that you hope and aspire to do business with, right? And something that's answering their pain points and answering their challenges. But it's a there's a bit of a balance, because being active on social media again doesn't mean that all you do is post. Yeah, you need to engage, you need to comment on other people's posts, you need to make meaningful connections. Yeah, so don't go through this whole "I want to make 500 connections in a day" thing. Make meaningful connections and build up relationships, because it does take time. Yeah, and you have to be able to play the long game. And one other thing that I'd add is authenticity, right? Authenticity, and that can pretty much be applied to anything in life, right? That's not just business, right? Be yourself. Be yourself. Be your own authentic self. And I think one other thing that many people tend to forget is be professional.
Yeah,
Be
it's
professional.
interesting, and I'm just like I said, a lot of this I've experienced over the years as an entrepreneur, and both building business personally and working for companies. But I'm also, as you're talking, I'm going through the Rolodex of people that I know that are running small businesses, especially during this time of life that has become, all of a sudden so many barriers were thrown in people's way. I think it's caused reflection. I think it's caused people to take a step back and kind of go, okay, what can we do differently? Which is always a good thing. But I also think it's that reflection has caused people to open their minds. And I'm kind of thinking through, smaller businesses that I've seen become more active on social media. I'm thinking in particular of a local sandwich shop that they started doing a special of the day, and the video wasn't great quality, but they were getting it out there, and they were letting people know how they could contact them, and they were just doing new things that maybe they would not have done before. And so I do think it's valuable for people to take inventory, and evolution and growth, that should be a constant. We should never not be growing and evolving. And so I would
Yeah,
encourage people,
absolutely.
no matter where you are in the process. You said something that I find interesting, and I want to throw this at you as kind of the person that knows this stuff.
Go.
Let's say someone has a business, and maybe they're 3, 4, 5, 10 years in, maybe they're 20 years in, and they're like, okay, we want to expand our business. We've never taken this branding thing seriously. The first piece of advice you gave people was to know your vision. And my question to you is, would it be a smart idea if someone has an existing business and they're ready to kind of re-trigger things to actually get feedback from their customer base? What do you feel when you engage us? What do you think about us? What's your vision when you think about us? Is that an element of feedback that people could gain value from?
110%.
Oh, you threw the 10% in as well.
It's so important. And again, Mitch, I'm glad you brought that up, because it's one of those things where you feel like, okay, that's pretty much a given, right? That you need to go and talk to your market and get validation and talk to the people that you do business with, right? Because it can't be just you're not in business because you think that your business idea and your products and services are so great.
Right.
You're doing it because it absolutely addresses a key pain point or challenge or problem that your target market has, right? So, and it's always important, and regardless of whether you've been around for 6 months or 60 years, it's always important to, keep your, as they say, keep your finger on the pulse of the market. Yeah. Because if, well, I mean, like, look at 2020, right? If this year has taught us anything, is that some of the things that we used to consider or acknowledge as conventional wisdom or commonly held beliefs, regardless of what our area of expertise was, a lot of that went out the window this year. Right? A lot of that went out the window this year. So what every responsible marketer, brand strategist, even entrepreneur, because to a certain degree, whether they choose to admit it or not, they are involved in branding and marketing, right? Whether they choose to do that themselves, or they choose to have somebody external come in and help them with that, right? Why? Because they have to check in on their customers regularly. They have to see what has changed in the market. They have to monitor the market dynamics, right? Because the way that they were doing business 10 years ago certainly has changed now, right? And we've seen this a lot, especially in the B2B space. I mean, not everybody, mind you, but there's a lot of I've spoken to some brilliant guys this year that were that are in tech startups or B2B SaaS. So SaaS is software as a service, right? So they caught on. They've their services are obviously all online, right? But I've also dealt with other industries that are a little bit more traditional, like steel, right? So they were used to seeing their customers, in person and going to trade shows to generate leads, and traveling to Las Vegas or wherever it is that they had that convention or that summit, and they would meet their customers there and some potential prospects. Well, now with all these restrictions,
Gone.
you ain't going nowhere,
Nope.
right?
Nope.
The only place, but regardless of that, and I've heard this a couple of times that, even if the trade shows are, all put on hold or postponed and you can't meet your clients in person, salespeople within a business or within an organization are still responsible for client acquisition. So if you can't go to those trade shows, again, it's going back to the being resourceful. So what else can you do? Can you look for people online? The answer is absolutely yes. Can you use the same tactics that you applied when you're at a trade show, like in person? Probably not, right? So my advice to anybody this year, and this goes a little bit beyond branding too, is think about where your target audience is at. Where are they online, right? How can you reach out to them in a meaningful, mutually beneficial, and non-intrusive way? And I know that sounds easier than it really is, right?
Especially online. Especially online.
But that's but quite frankly, that's B2B and most of the B2B world, as I said earlier in the conversation, they are not going to like look at my website or go to the website of the B2B service provider and take out their credit card and then off we go. Transaction is done. It generally doesn't happen that quickly, right? There is a certain process, there is a certain sales cycle that you have to go through. More often than not, again, it's not applicable across all industries, but many B2B industries actually require you to put a proposal together first. And you have to go, as I mentioned, right? Depending again on the size of the organization, you might have to go through different layers of validation before it actually leads to a closed sale, right? So a lot of things to think about. And if I might just add, because maybe people are going to be like, well, that's all great, Christian, but where does brand fit into all of that, right? Where brand fits into this equation is that if you make the time and effort, like a lot of things in life, right? It's an investment too, right? So if you spend your time building your brand in a well thought out and authentic manner, the benefits will be felt over a sustained period of time. What does that basically mean? That means mainly in the B2B world, your target audience will make decisions based on how qualified the service provider is to be able to perform said task. But on top of that, they will also see how credible you are. And one of the things that is so important that I cannot stress enough is, can they trust you?
Yes.
Can they trust you to deliver what it is you promised to do or to perform, right? And building a strong brand will help you to create that trust, will help you to create that credibility, which will lead eventually to higher wins. It might help also to shorten the sales cycle. I'm not saying it's always 100% guaranteed, but if they know who you are and they trust you, then they're not going to make you jump through so many hoops.
Yeah, it's a shorter path, right? It's a shorter
Yeah.
path from beginning to ending. So would it be fair for people that may still, because you started this interview off identifying a confusion of what branding really means. And I think, and there's different aspects to branding, but I do think overall, when you say branding, people will immediately go to logo, website, whatever. But would it be fair to look at your business and say, really, what my brand is my identity? Is that kind of a fair equation to maybe help people connect the dots a little more? Because when you look at identity, if you look at a persona, a person identity, you're looking at all the elements and character traits that make that up. Yeah, what are your thoughts on that?
Yes. That is certainly one way to put it, right? It certainly is a I would say it's also a reflection of your beliefs. It's a reflection of what you aspire to be as a business. And most importantly, because let's face it, at the end of the day, the target audience is going to say, "So, yeah, that's all great, but what's in it for me?" So it has to answer, what benefit is it to your target audience, to your customer, to work with you, right? How are you going to help them to solve their problem? In fact, let me jam on that a little bit further, if you'll permit me. One of the simplest ways that I explain how branding can help, how branding and how a business can help the target audience is basically by drawing a simple diagram. Well, I'm not going to draw it now, but I'm just going to use my two hands,
Where's your
right?
whiteboard, Christian? Come on.
Yeah, it's out of commission right now. But this hand signifies the current situation, or what we call hell, right? This hand signifies heaven or the desired situation of your target audience, right? So excuse everyone out there for using the Christian analogy, but this is probably the easiest way to explain it,
It's
right?
understood. Yeah, it's understood.
So the question that you need to ask yourself as a business, or in fact as an organization, because man, multinationals need to answer this question too. How do you get your target audience from their hell to their heaven? So you meet them halfway with your offer that will help them hopefully get closer to the heaven and further away from hell, right? The one mistake that you must not make, regardless of how big or how small your business is do not fall back into the hell positioning. Don't fall back into taking the target audience closer to hell instead of away from hell. And the other thing you mustn't do, and this is where branding plays such an important role, do not position your product or service as a commodity. Why? Because if you do that, then you're just one of many. I can choose so many others, right? And what do I mean by that? It's not just your offer, it's also in the way you price, in your pricing, right? Because the expression, if you just keep like cutting your rates and offering like cheaper rates, then it's a race to the bottom there, right? So What you want to do is move closer towards heaven in terms of bringing your customers there, but also in terms of your positioning. So what does that mean? That means you move away from the one of many to the one and only, right? Going back to what I said in the beginning, give people a damn good excuse, excuse the language, give them a damn good excuse to choose you over the competition.
It's that old adage of you've got to stand out for something. Whether you make the best sandwich in town, or you offer the best, highest quality fashion, or you offer the best counseling, it doesn't matter. The product's interchangeable. The formula and the process is the same.
Absolutely. And one thing, and yet another thing I'd like to throw in there, and this is applicable in both like B2B or B2C, regardless of what industry you find yourself in. One way to stand out, like the question is like, okay, Christian, well, that's all well and good, but how do I stand out? Do I make a nicer looking logo? Do I make a fancy website? Do I make a like a video series? What do I do? And I say, none of that. Have something that looks professional and looks modern and slick. Don't have a website that looks like it's from 1999, right? But the way that you stand out is to position yourself as a key person of influence, right? Everybody that's running a business and provides a product or solution has a specific area of expertise or a specific area that they specialize in. You have a story to tell the world. You have knowledge, you have experience, and how do you communicate that to that future customer who hasn't met you yet?
You used a word there I want to go back to real quick, and that's the word influence. And the reason I'm going to bring that word up is that that's a word, because of social media, the definition of being someone of influence has changed drastically in the last 10 years. So go a little deeper on that word influence, because some people may be listening and go, ooh, influence means influencer, means 10 million followers or 10,000 followers on Instagram or whatever. I have a gut feeling that's not at all what you're talking about there.
Oh, I'm totally talking about that. It's an
Oh,
Instagram live. Look, the truth is, I've said this many times before, I don't care much for those vanity metrics. How many people downloaded my podcast? How many people are following me? I mean, at one point, stuff like that looks well and good,
And
but.
there's some measurables to it. In other words, if we're talking about from a branding perspective, and if you're rolling something out, there is some measurable data. But just to lay that as your foundation of success or failure, like you're saying, is you called it vanity metrics. I love that.
Vanity
I
metrics.
love that phrase.
Because that's what it is. Because, like, let's face it, what wouldn't you rather have, instead of having 50,000 followers on LinkedIn, wouldn't you rather have 5,000 followers? And out of those 5,000, many of these people are actually your potential prospects and people that may do business with you in the future. I would much rather have that, right? But to answer your previous question about influence, clearly what I mean by that is making a positive, meaningful, and constructive impact on people within your target market, and within your, I think the phrase I was looking for was within your sphere of influence, right? And what do I mean by that, right? So, for example, if you're in a like a in a profession, you're providing professional services, for instance, right? So rather than just hard selling your professional services all the time, why don't you talk about like maybe some best practices or like your thoughts on like some key trends moving forward into 2021, right? Or why don't you bring on people that are your potential target audience, your ideal buyers, and interview them and get their take on, what the current market trends are like and where they think it's going. That's what I mean by influence, right? Or having something like a checklist to go through, right? Or for something like, for instance, if you're let's just say, for instance, you're a company that's providing web design services, right? So instead of like pitching everybody on LinkedIn all the time, why don't you post an article about the latest web design trends for 2021 that you need to think of, or like maybe a checklist that will walk you through if you're not sure, or if you have these things on your website, it's time for an upgrade, right? But it's not to imply that it's time for an upgrade because we want you to like use us. It's
Right.
time for an upgrade because maybe what you have right now is no longer relevant, right? Or how do you, or one that I think everybody's talking about these days is like, how do you improve your SEO? How do you make it easier? How do you make it easier for people to
Yeah,
find
to
you?
find you.
Because man, come on, like nobody wants to like click to like page number five on the Google search engine to find your website, right? So how do you do that? Right? So add value in ways that, you know, they're not necessarily all going to immediately translate to sales conversions, but they will give your target audience food for thought and things to think about and will help. And again, I'm going to bring this these words up again. It will help you to build their trust and credibility. So they will see you as somebody that's reliable, that's an expert, and that's somebody that, you know, gives helpful advice that they can trust.
I want to go back to someone that's developing a brand. And I have an observation that I think is true, but I want to get your kind of take on it. I actually believe that anyone that's trying to build a business or anyone that's dreaming of that or in the middle of it, whatever, I believe that the brand already exists. It's just working through clarifying what that is. In other words, I think people know what they want to do, why they want to do it, and how they want to do it. They just don't necessarily understand how to build the bridge from where they are to where they want to go. And that's where that clear you use that house analogy. Someone may have a vision of a house and they may hire the right construction people and they may have a great lot. But like you said, if they don't have that blueprint and they haven't clarified, that's where a lot of the confusion that happens. Because I really don't believe that a business that fails and goes under and doesn't last, I don't believe that was their only path. I just believe that there was some clarification that didn't take place. And part of this is me going through my own experience when I've had businesses that didn't last, or we chose to end them, or whatever. It wasn't that they couldn't have been successful. It was that we took some missteps along the way. The knowledge and everything already existed. It was the clarifying of what already exists. And I think that really ties into what you're talking about with branding and identity. And I hope that simplify, because some people look at branding and they go, oh my gosh, I have to do what? Like, you're wanting me to do what, Christian? And so there's kind of this solace that's found in this already exists. All we're doing is digging it out of the earth that is already, you know, that you're kind of already living on.
No, you bring up a really good point. I'm gonna say that I have a slightly different perspective.
Let's hear it.
Like, the brand might exist, for example, in the mind of the business owner and the entrepreneur. It might have existed in the mind of the founder of a large corporation, right? But I believe until such time where you actually, and this is the brand strategist in me coming out, where there is a formal verbal expression
Yes,
and a
yes.
formal visual expression of the brand, before any of that stuff happens, the brand probably will exist in thought or in theory, right? But those things need to happen in order, you know, for you to start building your brand. And certainly it doesn't stop when you do the visual expression, the visual, you know,
Right. There has to be
the sorry, the
fulfillment.
yeah, it has to be fulfillment, right? So it's not just you do the verbal and visual expression and then that's it and the end of story. No, absolutely not. Then you have to put it into action because otherwise, if you don't do that, then your brand doesn't really exist except internally, right? You have to put it out there into the world. It has to go on a website. It has to be communicated through content, through articles, through videos, and other mediums of communication. And to your other point, which I thought was also pretty good, I always try to compare a brand to a living, breathing organism.
Yes.
And there's living proof of that. Many companies have gone through the exercise of rebranding, revamping their brand, and look, we've got a new look, right? And the reason for that is because as your business grows and matures and develops, more often than not, sometimes the values change. Hopefully for the better, because it's a result of like what we call growing pains, right? Or you expand your product and service portfolio. So maybe let's say in the beginning, a particular company has just focused on one particular product or service, but as they've grown and expanded, they've also adjusted those categories accordingly. And most of the time, that expansion is a direct result of market demand. Right? It's not like, hey, listen, we're just going to roll out a new engine because we feel like it. Absolutely, it certainly never happens that way, right? It usually happens as a result of like changing market dynamics, as I've mentioned earlier. It's a result of changing customer demand. And one other thing, which I think many people outside the B2B world probably don't think much about, sometimes it's a result of compliance. So there's all of these factors involved. There's also factors where maybe the current product requires improvement, right? It requires improvement in terms of the features, the technology, but it all boils back to, okay, even if it has all these features and technologies, how does it help our customer? How does it address the challenges that they have, right? Will it make their ship go faster? Right? Will it help, especially in this day and age, will it be more energy efficient? Will it not pollute the environment? There's a lot of it becomes extremely complex, right? But it all goes back to, okay, what do we, again, I know it sounds so simple, but it really does start from there. What do we want people to think of us? What do we want to be known as in our target market, right? Because whether people choose to accept it or not everybody's your customer, right? Niche down, especially if you're a small business owner, niche down.
Yeah, and that's a jagged pill to swallow for many people. In fact, I would dare to say for 90% of especially entrepreneurs that are starting a business, that is the jagged pill to swallow. It's yeah, it's a challenge. I'm thinking as you're talking about all that and about rebranding, to me, one of the greatest examples of that is Nike after the Michael Jordan effect. They became a totally different company after the success of Michael Jordan. They had to, because they were basically a track shoe company before Michael Jordan, you know? And then all of a sudden they signed him and he came out and just exploded. And now all of a sudden they're not just making track shoes, they're making basketball shoes and they're making sweatpants and they're making, t-shirts that have, and that's just and really, if you read their history, that was actually a real, the success of Michael Jordan was much greater than they ever imagined. And that actually became a real crossroads for their company. I mean, they had to do a lot of reflection and say, okay, are we really going to go here or are we going to go back to our roots, which was the Oregon track team? I mean, that was their roots, you know? And that's a massive company who all of a sudden, because their hand was forced for many different reasons, they had to do some reflection and really rebrand and re-identify what their sense of being was going to be.
Exactly. I mean, that's certainly one example. I mean, the Nike example usually tends to be more consumer focused. But it's equally applicable in the world of B2B. In fact, in fact, I've had this discussion with a lot of other B2B marketers, and there are so many lessons to be learned from B2C that can be applied in B2B. But on the topic of a rebrand, right? If a company comes and says, okay, listen, we need a rebrand, it's important to know what factors influence or can be attributed to make an organization or a business, for that matter, decide to want to rebrand.
Yeah.
Right. So why do you rebrand? What's the thinking behind that? Right. So there's a couple of factors, right? One of them, certainly, which is the more obvious and visible one, is that your visual brand looks a little dated. Right. So it's like, yeah, that might have been hot in 1996, but maybe in 2020. Yeah. Number two is, if you find yourself struggling to state your key differentiators, right? And especially for smaller businesses, that's really important, right? Because I've met many people, and also many entrepreneurs who are going up against bigger competitors.
Yes. Yes.
Right. And they need to be crystal clear about, like, what is it about their business that's unique, right? Another one is if you're having difficulty attracting top talent, right? So somebody sends in their application and they go to your website and they're like, you know what?
Not going to happen.
Right. The other one, which I think is even more alarming, is struggling with lead generation, right? Because it links back again to, well, what's your key differentiator, right? Why should I choose you over another, right? And I've seen it happen in the past that, you know, and sometimes it's a result of complacency. Sometimes it's also a matter of, like, changing market dynamics, like, you know, during like times like these, where certain companies might have retainer clients,
right?
Which is great, but at some point that relationship might end. So, as pessimistic as this is going to sound, you always have to anticipate, okay, how can we make sure that we retain this relationship?
Yes.
And worst case scenario, if we lose this client, do we have another one to take his place?
Right. Constantly building. Yes.
Right.
Yes.
So, no rest for the wicked, as they say, right? This is an ongoing process. This is something that people have to be, you know, continuously diligent about, right? It's something that you can't take for granted, right? Another one is also, if you're, and this year is probably a good example, the behavior of your target audience has changed considerably.
Drastically.
Yeah. Drastically. So, like that. Yeah, exactly. So the behaviors have changed. The way they make decisions have changed. Mm-hmm. The way they purchase have changed. Mm-hmm. The way they look for information and research has changed. All of these factors, right? And the other one, I would say that there weren't too many of these cases, but I have heard a few where I've worked with companies in the B2B tech space where they've said, we're the only ones that are offering this kind of product.
Not for long.
Yeah. So it's assuming that you don't have competition. Yeah. And believe me, I mean, I know I make it sound easy, but any other company out there that provides an alternative to what you're currently offering to the market that will make your target audience choose them over you, that's competition. Mm-hmm. Right? Two more factors that I think are important to think about when you're considering a rebranding is if you're entering a new market, right? And especially if you're like a startup or a new business and you've had some success and you want to reach the next level in terms of your growth and maturity, there may be a call for a rebrand there.
Yeah, and I think companies of all sizes go through that, right? They go through the inventory and the reflection and the thought of, especially if there are companies that are really genuinely trying to stay cutting edge and to grow, they're probably always looking to reach new audiences at some point.
Yeah.
And so those are all amazing things to take inventory of. And I would encourage people that's not just a one-time shot. I mean, to me, all of those ideas you just presented are always floating in the background, right? When you're measuring success or lack of success or whatever that looks like. So I want to go back a little bit, Christian. Tell the people why in the world did you get into marketing and branding? And everyone arrives at where they're at for a reason. You don't just show up, right? Like, it's a journey. What brought you to this kind of place and time?
That's a good question. I think my better question is, how much time have you got?
Hey, you're the last interview of the year, so we can break all the rules, brother.
All right. Little known fact about me, and I appreciate the question. Little known fact about me is I actually built up my marketing career in Shanghai, China.
Wow.
I spent about 13 years over there. So I met my wife, who happens to be from Toronto, and that's why I'm based in Toronto now.
That's awesome.
I started out, marketing was always something that I was fascinated with in university. And it's simply because I loved the aspect of it where there's creativity involved. Mm-hmm. There's the desire to communicate some compelling message to the target audience. And there's also the market research aspect of it, that is included in that whole ecosystem as well, which also fascinates me.
Right.
It's so fascinating to, not necessarily analyzing data, but it's to understand like the behavior of the way customers behave and how that behavior has changed or how that behavior is influenced, mm-hmm. By a lot of factors, all around them. Right. So I went to China. One of the reasons was to study Mandarin. The other one was really because I wanted to challenge myself to work in one of the most dynamic markets in the world. Mm-hmm. And believe you me, when I say dynamic markets, it's like one of the things I think people noticed when I came to Toronto is like when I'm walking, it always looks like I'm in a hurry. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that was because of the pace that things moved in China. Mm-hmm. Right. So I wanted to apply for a job or a role where I could see my creativity, some of my writing skills and my communication skills be put to good use. So I got my first advertising stint in 2007 in what was then a mid-sized advertising agency in Shanghai. Humble beginnings. And I went through what they call the baptism of fire.
Right.
It was like, just imagine like, everybody's running on a treadmill and they just throw you onto a treadmill that's already on, right?
Yeah.
That's kind of what it felt like when I started out there. So I had to learn very quickly. I had to understand how the entire process works, client and agency relationships, how to brief designers and creatives and all that kind of fun stuff, how preparing a pitch presentation works, and so on and so forth. Mm. And I went on from there to work in a product marketing for a Fortune 500 company. So I understood also the other side of the spectrum from marketing from the client side. And then after that, mostly it was working in agencies. Now, all this time while I was working in agencies, it was mainly consumer facing. Mm. And what I noticed there, which I guess really I would say solidified my decision to make the switch to B2B, was that pitching for an advertising campaign for a large consumer brand of the likes of Pepsi kind of felt like we were thrown into a pool full of sharks, right? And everybody was just vying for the same price.
Right, right.
Extremely competitive.
Yeah.
We went up against some pretty big agencies who had produced amazing creative work. Right. And I just saw also the toll that kind of work took on the team.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And I told myself, it was the experience, I would say, is very, to be politically correct, it was very humbling. Right. I learned a lot, but just looking further into the future, I asked myself, I do want to stay in this space, mm-hmm. But I'm not sure if I want to be in a in an environment where everybody is on the verge of a burnout.
Right.
Right? I had the opportunity to join another agency that was kind of going through a metamorphosis of sorts, if we're going to put it that way. What that basically means is that they were dealing with both consumer-facing brands and also with business-to-business facing brands. And we found the opportunity to specialize in segments of the market that were like B2B or business-facing. Not because there weren't any other agencies doing it. There were. But shall we say that the clients that we were dealing with, they were looking for a specific type of service provider. Yeah. And what do I mean by that? They weren't necessarily just looking for somebody that came back with good creative work. They were looking for somebody that had a good understanding of how their business operates and how their target audience makes decisions and what their target audience is looking for. I'm not saying that they don't do that in consumer brands. Of course they do that, right? But I'm just saying that in that specific circumstance, in that specific situation, that was the opportunity that we identified, right? And these were clients that were that had this genuine pain point and challenge that needed to be solved. And we were willing to take that journey with them, right? And so it became not just a simple question of like helping them with their branding and marketing initiatives, but it became more of a consultation role, right? And that part of the business really fascinated me. And as I moved over to North America and I continued to take on clients here and eventually started my own business, that became even more apparent. That there is that genuine need out there for this kind of like work. So it's not just and again, nothing against people who do that. God bless them, right? But the area that I want to specialize in, it's not that, putting myself out there is like, hey, I can design your website, make your video. I feel while those things are important, those are almost, I would say 90% of the time, not the only problem that the client will have, right? There's an underlying problem, right? Like you have to trace it back to the root, right? Because that needs to be fixed first. So that's why I use the house analogy. Because if you use the house analogy, you call in a contractor and say, can you fix the crack in the wall? Or there's multiple cracks in the wall. So I could probably like use some plaster and cover them up. But what actually, if you dig further and you investigate, which in the branding context means you conduct interviews, you do a brand audit, you might find that there's something that needs to be fixed within the foundation. And so again, going back to the branding context and situation, if somebody asks me, can you do a video and can you do a website? Yeah, we probably could, but that's not really what your problem is. Your problem is the way that you're packaging yourself. The messaging to your target audience might be a bit confusing. In fact, if I read through your website, I'm not even sure who it is you're talking to. Right? And so that is a problem that redesigning a website is not going to fix. Redesigning will help, but there's other factors that that need to come into play there.
Yeah, it's differentiating the tools and the toolbox.
Yeah,
So
exactly.
you can have all the tools in the world, but if you have nothing to carry them in, you're only going to be able to carry a few at a time. And websites and logos and all of that are simply tools. There's a lot of other tools, but having the correct, toolbox to carry them in at the correct time is more important than actually having all those tools.
That's
Yeah,
right.
that's an interesting journey, and really, what I hear you kind of the picture I hear you painting in your experiences is there was something with that human engagement side that, and kind of dipping my toe in marketing the little I have, when you're dealing with what you were talking about the, you know, the ocean full of sharks and everyone's competing, there's no humanity in that, or very little humanity in that. And then to experience the idea of actually connecting with a client and helping them tell your story, that's where that humanity lies. And that's kind of what I hear you saying is, yeah, there was something magical in that connection that I just didn't get when I was swimming with the sharks. And
absolutely. And again, this is just my experience. This is my personal experience. And this was where I felt like, I heeded to my calling, as they say. Mm-hmm. and I felt that was a great opportunity here for me to, build my expertise in this, in this specific, area. So, right. So the opportunity presented itself and I took it.
Yeah. That's amazing, man. Christian, this has been awesome. It's been what I think we thought it would be. And there's so much value in this 60 minutes that we've spoken. So I'm very appreciative and honored that you came on to share your experience. And brothers and sisters, when you're listening to this, you've probably gotten about $5,000 worth of value in this one show. So take notes, please. I was taking some notes as well. Christian, you own you're a co-founder of the company Einblick, which I learned is the German word for insight. So
yes,
we'll put that in the show notes where people can go visit your website, einblick.co.
Yes.
Tell the people where you would like them to follow you. We'll also put it in the show notes, but go ahead and tell them where they could connect with you.
Yeah. Thanks so much. First of all, Mitch, thank you so much for your having me on the show. It was a pleasure, and as expected, it was great. It was a great conversation. I'm pretty active on LinkedIn, in a non-intrusive way.
I can vouch for that.
So you can look for me under Christian Klepp, but specifically Christian Klepp under Einblick Consulting. I think there's a Christian Klepp in Norway and another Christian Klepp in Austria. So just to set the record straight there. So Christian Klepp and Einblick Consulting. So Einblick is spelled EINBLICK, right? The other thing, if you have time and interest, is you can follow my podcast, and it's called B2B Marketers on a Mission.
Yes, right? Yes.
And you can find that on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Google Podcasts.
Awesome. Yeah, so go subscribe to Christian's show. Follow him on LinkedIn, and we'll put those actual links in the show notes as well. So people can just click it and go subscribe and follow you. I've listened to a few episodes, and you've got some really great guests on there. Again, if you're in business of any kind and you're just wanting to expand your knowledge, shows like Christian's, and we've had other guests on the show that have podcasts, you know, similar to what you do. And man, a great way to great resource, free resource usually to gain some knowledge. So if you are that entrepreneur or business person that doesn't have the, you know, wealth of resources, like we talked about, podcasts are a great way to learn some things. So,
yeah. If I may just leave the listeners with one last thought.
That was my next question. Yes, please do.
Well, first of all, it's I hope you walked away from today's conversation having learned something new or being inspired. And I encourage you, whether you reach out to somebody like myself, I'd be always happy to like have a conversation with you, or whoever it is you decide to do this with. It's up to you. But I encourage you, if you haven't done it already, go through this exercise of building your brand. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying this because I'm a brand strategist. I'm saying that the people I've done it with have gone on this really interesting journey of self-discovery. Right? And that's even like whether it's for your own business or whether it's for a larger organization, I would encourage you to do that exercise. And I'll leave you with one last thought, and then and then we'll wrap it up. I've been listening to a lot of podcasts as well, and I've attended a lot of webinars. And this is something that is really, I would say, worth worth looking into and worth mentioning, especially as we look forward into 2021, which is quite frankly just around the corner.
It's here. Yep.
Personal branding, regardless of the size of your business or organization, even in large organizations, right? And especially if you're active on LinkedIn, personal branding is the thing that people are going to pay more attention to. In fact, there's been some statistics that show that people are probably going to pay more attention to personal branding than they will to like company branding.
Right.
And that's
right.
Huge.
Right.
Not entirely surprising. Why? Because I think, Mitch alluded to it earlier. People want to do business with people.
Yes. Yes.
As cliche as that sounds.
That's always been the truth, but it's even more the truth after the pandemic and during the pandemic.
Oh, yeah.
It's that personal engagement is going to have even greater value.
Yes.
It's in fact, I, as I'm talking to people, having conversations with folks like you, it's interesting when I'm talking to younger generations, you know, early 20s, mid 20s, and I have a few of them that are, I would consider friends that have had major success in business, even at a young age. But it's funny because the conversation with someone came up the other day and I'm like, these mid 20-year-olds are talking in language that I, you know, and it's not because I'm old. It's just because I'm still a little bit old school in my thought process. And the funny thing is in talking to a lot of the younger generation is they're realizing quickly that some of that old school face-to-face, person-to-person engagement is actually going to be more valuable than ever, possibly. The great thing about the younger generation is they're so quick to pivot, whereas a lot of the older generation was slow to pivot. So I always encourage young entrepreneurs and business people or anyone, take that understanding and that quick ability to learn and season in some old school human relation idealism, and you're going to have some real success in the future, real success. So I love that. Love it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Christian, again, this has been great. I want to give you our 5-question game that we play with every guest at the end of each show.
Yeah, sure.
The only rule is one word answers only. That's the only rule. So
okay.
We'll see if you can do it.
I'll do my best.
Regarding books, do you prefer digital or paper?
Paper.
Coffee or tea?
Coffee.
What's one guilty pleasure that you have?
Chocolate.
That is the majority of the answer almost every time. That's so amazing.
But it's true.
What's one thing that you cannot live without?
Oof. Laptop.
Ah, nice. And what's your favorite season of the year?
Spring.
Nice. Christian, this has been awesome. Thank you so much for coming on the Mitch Gray Show. I greatly appreciate it. I've been looking forward to this interview for a while, and now we know why. So now we know why.
Thanks, my friend. It's been a real pleasure.
Brothers and sisters, please go subscribe to Christian's show. We'll put that link in the show notes. Make sure you go visit his website, einblick.co. We'll put that in the show notes as well. And this is our last interview for the year, so we hope you have a great end to the year. We hope that you're ready for the new year. Just remember that because the calendar changes doesn't mean all the challenges and great things in life as well change, but we're ready for some new refreshing times. So
absolutely.
We hope that you are safe and well. Thank you for listening to the Mitch Gray Show. Please go subscribe to the show anywhere you listen to podcasts. And I do want to say, if you subscribe to us on iTunes, we have had to change our iTunes format. So you're going to have to go in and find the new show. iTunes, Apple Podcast was not friendly to us when we changed platforms. So resubscribe to the show on iTunes. We are available now on many more platforms than we were before. So that's a plus. So make sure you follow us on social media at M Gray Media. I'm also on LinkedIn as well, Mitch Gray, G-R-A-Y. And thank you so much. We hope you have a great end of the year, and we will talk to you soon.
Take care.